This is a true story.
The podcast you're about to hear covers events that took place in New Mexico, Minnesota, Washington, New York, South Dakota, Nevada, and the Black Lodge in 2017 and 2010 or something.
At the request of the survivors, the names have been changed.
Out of respect for the dead, the rest has been told exactly as it occurred.
Welcome to the Better Call Fargo edition of the Serious TV Drama Podcast with Scott and Dan. I'm Scott, and with me as always, the cherry pie to my damn fine cup of coffee, it's Dan.
Sweet.
Exactly. Now, as anyone who listened to our little intro there might have pieced together, tonight we're not just going to talk about that suspended shyster in Albuquerque or those twaddling twins in Minnesota. We're also going to take a swing at discussing a bit about the return of one of the most, I'd say, groundbreaking and mind-altering TV series of all time. I'm pretty sure you'd agree with me on that one.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I know it's one of your faves. So it's dessert. We're going to save that for last. But before we head to the Pacific Northwest and all the other places it surprisingly covered in its premiere, we're going to start where we usually do in the Southwest with Better Call Saul. Now, the latest episode was titled Expenses, and it was both written and directed by Thomas Schnauz, who we've discussed a million times before, so we don't need to go over his resume yet again. I'll start off right now by saying, while this might not have quite have been on the stomach-churning, depressing scale as like that bad day Jesse Pinkman had back in Breaking Bad Season 2, the episode Down.
Where he ends up in the outhouse.
Yes.
Or not outhouse. You can tell I live in a rural area.
I was about to say, you really gave that one away. And there we go, first minute of a curse. The porta potty. But this is an episode where we see Jimmy lose and lose and lose again, hitting wall after wall and pretty much getting further and further frustrated. And I'd say by the end of it all, quite frankly, we see him as a much darker character than I think he's ever been on this series so far. I mean, I think that's fair to say, at least.
Yeah, I personally don't take frustration very well myself, so I can totally empathize with what he's going through in this case. I don't quite go as I don't go in that direction exactly, but I definitely, I've had days like that.
Right.
We all have, I suppose.
Right. I mean, let's see. First, he has to start his community service now, part of his sentence, I guess, picking up garbage underneath an overpass, and then quickly do like a wet ones rub down and change clothes in a parking lot before trying to hustle up someone to buy those paid for commercial ad spots. But, you're getting the sense, you realize that the guy's money, it's a dwindling away, and he's also trying to get a refund on a year's worth of legal malpractice insurance. He obviously is not going to be needed. But every time he's getting hammered down. And during all of this, he's still trying to keep up appearances, cover his half of the bills at the office with Kim. So I'm guessing he's probably burning through his savings something fierce now. You kind of wonder just how much money does he even have left at this point. It might have just been a cute little inside joke, or maybe not such an inside joke. Did you think that moment when he was picking up the crusty underwear was like a little bit of a wink at future Walter White and the infamous Tidy Whities?
Yeah, I thought that was definitely a Easter egg of that type.
Yeah, unless Walt's underwear fell through some sort of time-space continuum portal and somehow transported many years before he ever even put them on. But I thought that was kind of amusing. I'm trying to think what else I liked about all those segments. By the way, I really enjoyed seeing the Sklar brothers show up. Those are the twins who are the owners of the music store. That was an unexpected. I guess it was a bit more than a cameo since they had a bigger part there, but that was kind of fun. But how I thought there was that really nice poignant moment when the cue card girl offers to give Jimmy his money back. I found that oddly touching. It was like, oh, she's so sweet, you know. But I'm going to say the most, for me, the most telling scene, perhaps in the entire episode, was when Kim and Jimmy go out for a drink. The whole that was really, and I think that's when you really become aware of the toll this is taking on Jimmy and where Jimmy may be going, even more so than what he does at the end, which we'll get to in a second. But it's clear that they're there, and you know, and Kim's trying to relax because she's been having a day too, because clearly, I guess the guilt of what they did to Chuck is really eating away at her far more than it clearly is doing to Jimmy. I mean, doesn't she have that moment where she says to the woman from Mesa Verde that all he did was tear down a sick man or something like that? I think. But here, she's trying just to get back into the playfulness of it, of like, you know, looking at the different patrons in the bar and, you know, creating like stories of how they might try to con them, even though she's clearly not planning to do that again. But geez, Jimmy, man, he's like dead-eyed serious the entire time. And more so as it goes on. I think when he starts overhearing conversations, especially when like that one, I guess it's that one guy who sounds like a real asshole. And maybe he's thinking of that guy kind of the way he thinks about Chuck in a way, maybe. Because, you know, because the guy's clearly acting like, you know, a pontificating know-it-all. I wonder what that's like. Anyway, and I could be self-deprecating, you know. But oh, it was just it's I can't I don't know if I want to go as far to say it was scary, because that's too extreme a way to put it. But you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, this is something we haven't seen with him before. And quite frankly, we hadn't seen him like that when he was Saul Goodman either. So that's really, it's just showing how much this is really weighing on him and weighing him down, and what and maybe this is the kind of stuff that's going to be pushing him in the direction that we know the show is eventually going to lead, not so much the silly TV ad guy persona, I guess, if that makes any sense.
And I definitely found it to be very heartbreaking when the look on Kim's face when like Jimmy just totally crosses the line there, and you just knew that the situation's not going to end well between the two of them. I mean, it's
I mean, that's the other unfortunate, that's the, well, forget unfortunate, tragic part about this story overall, and probably I think one of the biggest mysteries of the show, because you've got all these characters, we know where they're going. It's just how when they get there and how they get there. But then you have characters we have no idea what happens to. I mean, we have our suspicions what happens to Chuck, you know, the whole, which makes me think it won't happen just because it seems so obvious he's going to die in a fire at this point. But we have no idea what happens to Kim. And
No, I
for
mean,
me, that's the biggest mystery. I want to know what happens to Kim. You know, does she, I mean, I assume she lives. She just, you know, they just go their separate ways. Oh, by the way, I apologize to the listeners in advance. I'm actually sick right now, so if I have to suppress a cough or two, that's what's happening here. But I have to do that right now. I'm going to mute myself. Hold on. Ooh.
the
Oof, boy.
I. Yeah, I definitely don't think that Kim has it in her to turn to the dark side, and I don't see her being able to handle the strain of trying to continue on in a compromised position indefinitely. I just I guess I don't expect her to jump into a swimming pool fully clothed or anything, but I don't think that. I don't. I
Nice.
definitely don't think she. I don't think she has it in her to, be the con woman.
Right. Well, that's why I'm kind of curious where this show goes, not just the last few episodes of this season, but more so next season. Because when we were talking the other in our previous podcast, I don't feel we're gonna have an entire year worth of Jimmy not being a lawyer on the show. I don't see how the show really sustains itself story-wise that way. That's why I was saying there would be some sort of a time jump or something like that. Because Because then, yeah, because if they did try to do that, then these two are going to go their separate ways a lot sooner than we think. Because, you know, how is she going to be able to tolerate just dealing with him for the next year? And he's not even a practicing lawyer anymore. Heck, a show I was watching today, which at the very end of the episode, jumped 6 years and 7 months. So it happens all the time. Huh. I knew they were going to do a time jump. I just didn't realize, oh, they're doing it now. They're not going to wait till next season. Okay, wow. 6 years and 7 months. That's such a weird number amount of time. That's like a Mad Men kind of jump. Actually, it's bigger than a Mad Men jump. That final scene, though, with him and the insurance agent.
Huh.
You knew right when he started doing the sob story act that was all bullshit, though, right? I mean, that was I thought that was
pretty... Nope.
Oh, you actually? No, okay.
No, right. No, I was more focused on like Odenkirk's acting ability before I realized what I was seeing. It probably took me a good 20-25 seconds before I started to suspect that he was just, once he started to put more and more information that was very specific out.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think I'm not claiming to pick up on things all that fast, especially with TV shows. I'm not the brainiac I pretend to be sometimes. But I felt there was, because one of the things about Odenkirk's performance on this show, specifically Better Call Saul, more so than even some of his time on Breaking Bad, although in later years I did see this. He's got a lot of subtleties to his performance, and it's interesting how he can have an over the top character but be understated as well many times. This seemed to be for him. It had an over the top, hamming it up more so nature than normal. So right off the bat, I was like, I'm not believing this. And I knew it was because when he heard the 150% thing and how he just got screwed, I knew what he was up to, but I kept thinking, is he going to stop himself? Because if he goes through with this, as he clearly did, he's not doing this for any other reason or purpose other than pure vindictiveness. This is just him doing something just to be mean. There's no other reason for him to do that. And that's something we haven't really seen him do before.
He's definitely, the first thing we've seen him do is totally out of spite, because pretty much everything else we've seen him do, I mean, he's been, bending the law and doing things here and there, but at least he has like some justification. But for here, I mean, there's no, there's no positive light
right
to be shown on this.
Right. He's always had a habit of doing the wrong thing for the right reasons. This is just wrong. Like if he told Kim he did this, she'd be like, "You did what? Why would you do that?" You know, and just because you had a bad day, that's not a reason to do that. You know, I mean, I'm in favor of it, but I'm a spiteful son of a bitch, so I don't mind. So it was also interesting. So that was going on, and that's obviously the bulk of the episode. But we also spent some time with Mike in the episode. And it was interesting because compared to what Jimmy's been going through, Mike, who's the guy who's been dealing more often with, out and out criminals and killers and whatever, he seems to be having, a very nice peaceful time right now. He's got that shitload of money in the bottom of his closet, which I kind of forgot about. I forgot about all that money he'd gotten. I guess that was from the robbery when they ripped off the truck for Hector, if I'm recalling. Excuse me. But it's, I guess the Mike stuff was just him happily, I should say, paving the playground. And I was wondering if they're even trying to set up a little relationship with the leader of the grief support group, who I recognize her. She's one of those, she's an actress I've seen like a million times on Law and Order. She's always like the coroner or medical examiner. I don't remember her name, but anyone who's ever watched Law and Order the last 20 years, like, oh, her. Yeah, right. Okay. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, I wasn't expecting them to do anything like that with Mike, so I found that to be very, very interesting. Potentially, I don't know what the heck would happen, but it's something I wouldn't have expected to happen. So it's kind of cool.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure it's nice for the actor too, because it gives him a chance to play a few more shadings, and not have all the scenes just be Mike's a badass, or Mike is stoic, or Mike doesn't have much of a sense of humor. I like that. It gives us a chance to see a little bit more about him. kind of like in a very different direction, kind of like 5-0 showed the emotional side. And we saw him break down probably for the only time I can on the show, as far as I can recall, just about. But the great stuff about the Mike segment of the show this week, we got a return of a character I should have known was going to pop up again, but I kind of forgot about him.
It's such a smart way to bring that that character back in and to connect these two storylines. I just really like the way they've done that. I mean, I suppose they could have used the vet or something, but that really wouldn't make sense if they wanted a human pharmaceutical.
Right, exactly. So, absolutely. So. I was thinking the same thing. I was going, wow, they're really putting the pieces in place really nicely here, and you have a really great reason to bring this the character Price back into it. And I love the fact it's just like he just basically wants like the empty capsules that would normally hold like the nitro heart drug or something. And I love that Mike really catches on to what's going on pretty fast. So that's they didn't waste time with that, which I know some people, certain people, one or two people, well, one person accuses the show of at times. But I just like how things are kind of knitting together. Again, I don't know if the Jimmy stuff is really going to fold over to the other stuff. It probably won't. I'm okay with that because I personally feel it's a strong enough storyline on its own. You can have separate storylines. But
it's the kind of thing too, where it's good that like the showrunners are confident enough where they don't, where them, I'm guessing that they don't feel that they need to combine these two storylines. They can just do their own thing. They don't have to like do it because like they don't want to piss off the fans or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel that one of the things this show has done really well this season in particular is they've been able to balance kind of like the fan service desire of, you know, the old school Breaking Bad fans, but do so much striking out on their own with characters who are not part of the Breaking Bad canon, and thus storylines that are not really part of that as well. And I for one, I'm equally interested in them. I know some people state a preference one way or the other. There's nothing wrong with that. People have preferences for any number of things. But I'm never like, oh, go back to the Mike stuff, or oh, go back to the Jimmy stuff. I'm equally invested in both things for very different reasons. And I love the fact that I think it goes for you as well. We have very different reasons. One might be more of an emotional investment. One might be more of a, ooh, that's really kind of fun, you know, kind of investment, if that makes any sense. Like, well, the Breaking Bad stuff tends to be more, oh, it's just fun. You know, it's the kind of stuff that when we look forward to doing a Breaking Bad rewatch someday, and now we have all this new information that the powers that be have come up with that will make like all the Gus Fring scenes in season 4 become that much more interesting, especially all the Mike stuff. And the Mike stuff is going to be fascinating to watch when I do a rewatch at this point.
Speaking of season 4, not the same show, but do you think Hector is going to make it out of this season, or do you think what the plan with him will be executed in the next few episodes?
Before last week, I would not have said this season.
Same,
but now that we're already on track, one of two things is going to happen. I mean, Nacho's scheme is going to he's going to attempt it. The question is it going to be successful or not? I mean, obviously, it's not going to be successful because I think his plan is to kill him, and he's not going to kill. We know that Hector doesn't die; he's obviously incapacitated.
Do you think he wants to put something inside the pills, or just have them be empty so they're useless?
I think he wants to put something inside the pills. I think you're okay. I think you're aware if a pill is empty, you'd know. I mean, it wouldn't have any weight to it, first of all.
Your
question is, would it be a different drug, or would it be just a pure placebo? You're right. It could be just a pure placebo. That would actually make more sense than risking putting a different drug, because they could find that in him, you know.
Because a placebo would look more natural than anything. And that's a good idea.
Right. I think the placebo thing would make more sense, because then it becomes more of a death by natural causes situation, as opposed to, oh, there was arsenic. Well, not arsenic. It'd be funny if Nacho gets arsenic, like it's a 1920s stage play or something. But Yeah, I really, again, I really liked this episode a lot. I thought it had a great little mix of humor, but a lot of pathos to it. And you could see a lot of parallels between things that happened in this episode and earlier seasons. I'm loving this season a lot. Huh. So,
yeah.
I mean, I know you've, I think when we've done our best as, did you have it both years as your favorite for the year?
I'm pretty sure I did. I tend to, I just end up in love with it.
Right. I think for me, I know, I think I had it, I'm going to say like number three, maybe last season. I don't remember what I did in the first season. I know it was a top five finisher for me. It's definitely top three right now. I'll wait to see how the whole year shakes up, but it's a super strong contender. But you know, obviously, there's a lot more TV to watch this year. But I've been more pleased than I can imagine with the show so far. So, yay!
Yeah.
Okay, I think. Is there anything else you wanted to cover on it, or can we move on?
Yeah. Do you think? What do you think they're going to do with with Hector needing treatment, and how do you think they're going to bridge that and Tuco taking care of him? Do you think they maybe like Tuco will be let out of jail a few months early or something to take care of his family member? Or isn't that how that kind of thing works? Or
I don't think, since he's not a, I don't think it would be that, because unless they're going to try to push the idea that Hector has no other living relatives, maybe. But other than that, he's his uncle, I'm guessing. I don't know if that's a direct enough relation for him to get out of jail earlier. I think the curiosity I have, and I think we mentioned this before, so apologies for repetition, is why does someone who is such a high-ranking member with Don Eladio end up, like, basically, you know, in a shitty little wheelchair in a shitty little shack somewhere, with no one really doing anything to take care of him except for Tuco, who only happens to stop in there. Because that's the other thing I was always curious about. It never seemed like Tuco lived there, because it's so off the beaten track, you know? So when Tuco's not there, who's taking care of Hector? Because he can't take care of himself. And obviously Gilligan and crew didn't need to worry or think about that way back in early season two. But now it's hard not to wonder about that, and whether they're going to have to fill in those gaps, because I'm imagining Hector will eventually end up in that wheelchair, but we're also going to find out why there must be some sort of falling out, why they don't do something more to help him.
Right.
So I'm very curious about that. I'm wondering if maybe he somehow gets, what's the word I'm looking for? If Gus does engineers something to disgrace him or something, so there's a kind of a falling out or something like that. I wonder about that, you know. But they'll just leave him to fester in a wheelchair by himself. I have to cough again, sorry.
Yeah, that's, I really, yeah, whatever, I'm guessing that'll be interesting, whatever they end up doing with that.
Yes. I mean, and hopefully if it does happen by this season, and if we do see him next year, maybe at that point, what's the actor's name who plays Tuco? I'm forgetting it right now. It's drunk.
Raymond Cruz.
Yes, Raymond Cruz from the Closer and everything. Maybe he'll have time to show up on the show again, because I wouldn't mind seeing him show up again. He's kind of an electric presence, so that'd be kind of fun.
Yeah,
and a way to knit storylines together again because of his past issues with Jimmy. So we've got that as well.
Yeah, it'll be sad not to see Mark Margolis, skulking around being a complete bastard. But he just showed up in the season of Oz that I'm finally started up again, so at least I get to watch him in that for some length of time.
Oh, I didn't know you went back. You didn't? Why didn't you tell me you're watching Oz again? Oh my gosh!
I just started like a couple days ago. I picked up. I was midway into season two, and I finished off season two the other night.
Oh, doesn't it end great? I'm sorry. For anyone who doesn't know, Oz is still one of my all-time favorite shows, and season two, especially the ending and what happens to a certain character, I still wince just thinking about it. Ooh, crack, 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 crack. That's pretty nasty. Okay. Wow, didn't expect to talk about Oz in this podcast. Awesome. I love that. So, I think now we can move up the map. Yep. Yes, we're going to move up the map. Let's move up the map to Fargo. how the latest episode of Fargo was titled The Lord of No Mercy. And I'm going to say that's a title I'm not going to bother to define for you this week. If you can't figure out what that means, I don't know what to do with you guys. The episode was written by Noah Hawley himself, yay, and directed by that name again, that Dubla Walsh. I'm going to say right now, maybe neck and neck with the third episode, maybe not. This one really worked for me so much better than almost any other episode this season for me. Just in terms of connecting with the storylines together and the characters. I'll even go out on a limb. Well, actually, it's not really much of a limb at all, but I'll go out right here and say, if only the first couple episodes of the seasons had felt like this one to me, I would be so much higher on this season than I have been so far. I mean, so I'm just giving my opinion right up front with this one. So, I mean, if you feel differently or the same, well, let's hear what you have to say so I can stop talking for a minute.
Yeah.
Dan, did you just fall down a flight of stairs?
No, I'm just sitting here.
Okay, your sound went out. What were you saying?
I highly believe that this is probably the point where Noah Hawley finished up on Legion and had time to come on to Fargo more.
That's what I was thinking something similar to that. It's like, maybe he finally got Legion out of his system and he said, wait, what have we been doing on this show? All right, people, we need to get our shit together here. Excuse me, sorry.
You know, I mean, and you know, they definitely upped the ante, raised the stakes significantly, obviously. So I wasn't really expecting them to do what they did this week. I don't know why I'm talking like it, but it's fucking spoil somebody. But if you haven't watched Fargo yet, don't listen to this, idiots. but yeah, they definitely I have no idea what they're going to do now. I mean, there's a variety of things they can do, but I wasn't expecting this kind of event to happen at this point. So.
Right. First of all, for the overall episode, I'll tell you why I would classify. I would finally, truly, although I think the third episode was a great episode. Also, I think we both equally had affection for that one because it was just different. But why I thought this was a great episode? Two words: dramatic tension. Or if you just want one word: suspense. Something I didn't quite really feel at any other point in the early episodes, where there should have been at certain points. I never felt it. This time, it worked in a number of situations, of times. I also, you know, going back to you just mentioned Legion a few moments ago, I think it's funny that if we go back and think about Legion, one of the running lines of Legion and something we kept talking about, you know, week after week was the question of what is real. And it's interesting that this season of Fargo, there's a constant question of what is the truth? You know, that they're taking the whole, this is a true story to such an extreme where it's almost too much, quite frankly. But in this episode, I found it so enjoyable. I didn't care. I mean, that opening with Vargas telling us, you know, these three true stories, you know, the banking crisis, how World War I was started due to a guy stopping for a sandwich, and then the moon landing being faked, which is really like, which one of these stories is actually false? But Vargas goes on to talk about how perception is truth, and that's just something that they keep echoing throughout the season from the get-go. So it's interesting that, and I think Noah Hawley is doing that, because this season of Fargo, and I said this in a previous podcast, was done very recently. I'm thinking they've wrapped it at this point, but it's been done within the last couple of months. This isn't something that was done like a year ago or several months ago, which is when we were talking about why Jim Gaffigan couldn't be on it. I think that's one of the telltale signs. I think he's really doing something that's making a commentary on what's been the issue in this country over the last several months about what constitutes truth, what is real news, what is fake news, you know what I mean? I think he's kind of playing with that. But unlike, you know, some shows, which I still enjoy, but they're not very subtle about things, he's doing it in a way where I don't think many people are realizing that's kind of what he's playing with here. It, it's It's better in some episodes than it is in others, but I'm enjoying it regardless because it's something different. So I always like to see something different.
Right. Yeah, this week it just kind of felt like more like Fargo. Like everything, they had, suspense, sometimes, really crazy, over the top, sometimes more of a subtle, moment, just like a, like when the dude was kind of hanging out or outside the motel, like under the stairs, whatever. I mean, it was just, just really nicely done. Subtle is the best word I can think of for it, even though maybe that's not correct. But just like everything, they had a humor that was working out well. I mean, like the stuff with the
IRS agent.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love the IRS agent scene.
Yeah, and it's funny in a quirky way, and just they're making good. I mean, they made good use of the whole ensemble this week. I mean, they didn't use the Russian guy really in any way, but for the most part, they used, I think, pretty much all the other characters in a nice way, and it just kind of felt like they just had their act together.
Yeah, you had a good balance of character usage, absolutely. I think you gave characters some really strong scenes that worked. And it depends on what scene you're talking about. I mean, the scene with Gloria and Winnie meeting with Emmett and apparently Vargas. And I'll even put aside the fact that at some point they should have insisted on what his name was, because I didn't care. Because I think it was more absurd that he was able to do all that and they never even get what his name is. But that was a great scene. I mean, because... And that's one of those, and what made it a great Fargo scene is a scene that had like both humor, but still an underlying tension throughout the whole thing. And I really loved Carrie Coon's character throughout that scene because she's making it clear, maybe even more so than previous Fargo cops that we've seen. Although they've all been very strong characters, she's not someone to be screwed with. Or I should just say fucked with, because we curse on this. I really thought that was a great scene. I thought it was so strong. And even though part of me kept saying, they should stand up more to him here. But then I realized, oh no, she's playing it smart because she doesn't know exactly what's going on here. So maybe they're gonna lie low. Kind of like what Nikki does earlier on in the episode. Another person who I think did a great job in this episode was the Nikki character, who we actually felt genuine emotion for, I'd say, seeing what she'd gone through. I mean, which is another thing that this episode does that we hadn't really felt, I think, very much in previous episodes. We actually felt an emotional connection to characters, or we understood their motivations. We felt bad for Nikki and what she just went through, and trying to imagine what it would be like to be beaten so badly and to the point where it's okay to lay in a tub filled with ice water, because I would never do that. it ain't because of shrinkage. I mean, that's just, it's like hypothermia, I would think. But I felt more empathy for Ray wanting to get revenge for his girlfriend than ever feeling any empathy for Ray feeling like he got screwed over by his brother, if that makes any sense.
Of course
it makes sense. If that makes any sense, of course it makes sense. And then, yeah, let's just get to it. The intercutting between, I guess his character's name, it's Mimo, is the little...
yeah.
As she puts it, because she probably hangs out with our friend Jason Jones, the Oriental guy, the Asian guy, who we think is going to kill her. But we intercut between that scene and the Ray Emmett scene. And again, one of the things the show has done well is totally make these two characters be on screen together, and it's not Back to the Future. You're totally believing that they're inhabiting the same space. They've done a really nice job of that. I defy anyone to say they saw that coming, because I went, wait, what? Did you just kill one of the two main characters? Did you just psycho us? What the hell just happened here? So I was in jaw-dropping shock at that one. And that the show has not done that to me. Other than the cartoon stuff in episode 3, I've not had my jaw on the floor watching Fargo this season, but that did it.
That was great. And just the way they made, you know, like, of course Ray would be dumb enough to take the glass out of his neck. I mean, you can just, they've established that very well, that
yeah,
he does not make the best decisions. And you know, and the way they've got it, like, you know, like Varga is willing to use the beating that they put down on Nikki, and just to, like, you know, pin this on her because Ray's the one that was beating her. It's just like, it's just so smart and just so nasty, and I just love it.
It's more cruel than just you know, snuffing her out the way they had planned. It's almost like you screw with us is what we're going to do to you, kind of a thing. I love that Emmett even tells him, you know, because Emmett knows, like, no, don't pull that out of your throat, because then it's going to be and the fact that the argument is so foolish that he won't take he's finally giving him the stamp. And he gets upset over the semantics of the phrase, I'm giving it to you. It's like, well, you're not giving it to me, it's mine. It's like, and he's like, oh, okay. And then he's like, I don't want it now. It's like, wow, you moron. But it's perfect for that character. That's the character that they established with him. The interesting thing was, I'm becoming just a little bit, Not enough as I'd like to be at this point in the season, but I'm becoming a little bit intrigued with Ray's character because here he's totally trying to do the right thing. He's trying to be a good guy. He's trying to finally just once and for all resolve this issue. Here, take the stamp. It's what you've always wanted. Blah blah blah. And I don't even think he doesn't even know what happened to Nikki or anything. He I don't think there's any reason he would know about that at this point, unless Sai told him. But I don't know if Sai has told him at this point. But earlier in the episode, when Sai is still trying to be the voice of reason as far as the avoiding the whole criminal enterprise, Ray seems to be shifting there.
Emmett.
I'm sorry, Emmett. Wow, I'm surprised it's the first time I've done that. I keep doing that. But he's definitely like shifting his POV now on this. So I think he's actually been falling for Vargas's words about the potential for the money stuff, or maybe losing his family. And now this is all he's got. Maybe he's just going to get absorbed into the whole money aspect of it. I don't know, but I'm curious to see how he gets further corrupted beyond, you know, being a now willing participant in this whole money laundering, whatever the hell the damn thing is. I don't even know at this point. Sorry for my sniffle. I could have done without Vargas picking his teeth, though. That was a moment I could have. It's like, yeah, I got it. Yeah, he's rotting from the inside, and he's
you know,
yeah.
You know, we've seen him do a lot of shit in the last several episodes. Just a nice variety of just, like, you know, less than kosher. Type things.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, that reminds me. Let me just cough one more time. I meant to mention something from the get-go. So I thought I might acknowledge something that may or may not have been a mistake on my part in our last podcast. I don't know if it's a mistake or not. So when I say I was corrected, I'm putting that in like little quotation marks now. And my hands are doing air quotes right now. By one of our listeners, or two of our listeners, a close friend of mine. She knows who she is. They know who they are. But they were telling me that they thought that Vargas did not urinate in Sai's mug in the previous episode, but it was more like he was like merely, I guess, well, dipping his balls in a mug of water or something. I'm not sure. Because to me, that would mean that Vargas has just been marinating his balls and his schwants in this water, but then just pops his wet genitals back into his pants. So I'm not sure about that. So I tried to look it up online. So I read two of the more leading critic site reviews/recaps of a show. God damn it, they didn't help, because the AV Club review seemed to treat it like it was like genital dipping. And then Alan Sepinwall refers to it as a cup of urine, so I didn't know what to think. I'm just going to say, I just say that the urine works better as a sheer gross factor. I guess it doesn't really matter either way, but I would think the revulsion would be more extreme based on that. Not that I really would want to be drinking water that someone just had their stuff sitting in for whatever. But it's such a weirder thing to... Maybe it is that, because that's such a weirder thing to do than just peeing in a cup. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
And to be fair, if he was dipping his balls in there for a while, there's probably a little urine in the water, so you're still right.
Yeah, there could be a lot of anything in that water, quite frankly. Ooh. Huh. Oof. I'm sick enough already.
Mm.
Oh, Lordy. So, again, I was... Man, I wish that if the season had been like this, we would have been so much more high on this so far. But I think the good thing is, if they can ride this wave and be at this level for the rest of the season, that at least maybe we'll have an overall positive feeling about the season once we finish up. Not just that it was good, that maybe it was like at least very good. Although that might be tough because I know a lot of it was dependent on the fact that we had a shocking death, and I don't know. Although I guess they could pile on more shocking deaths, but it's not, that wouldn't be the same thing. But whatever. I really liked it. I was very surprised how good I thought it was this week.
Yeah, a real step up, and hopefully they can finish strong, and we can, it'll help and help us forget the first half, just kind of like the season 3 of Hannibal.
I knew that's where you were going. Oh, and
yeah. And I didn't even give it any thought until just when I started saying it. So I think we know each other pretty good.
And I haven't even read that article that's been posted about the possible season 4 thing. I don't even know what that's all about. And I got tagged in. It's like, I'll read it later, whatever. I'm sure it probably happened like in 5 years or something. Okay. And speaking, check out this unexpected segue. Speaking of waiting a long time for something to come back, do you think it's time to talk about something else?
Yep.
All right, then. Well, let's take an unexpected and a downright eerie journey to in a more northwestern direction to Twin Peaks. More than 25 years after Twin Peaks ended its, I'm going to say, bumpy and bizarre run on ABC, the new Twin Peaks series debuted this past Sunday on Showtime, parts 1 and 2. And I know a lot of you who are listening have probably already tracked down parts 3 and 4 online or on demand or via Amazon or whatever. I might even do that tomorrow morning if I sneak into my friend's house. We haven't decided that yet. But, now, Dan, I know that Twin Peaks has long been one of your all-time favorite shows, so I actually think it's more important or relevant, as far as this podcast is concerned, to get your take on it, and then we can bat it back and forth as far as what I thought and different things we liked, disliked, whatever. Because I mean, I don't know how much time we'll spend here. There's certainly a lot one can talk about. There's a lot of good. There's some not so good, but that was the way Twin Peaks always was, as far as I was concerned. I always, even when it wasn't good, I always considered it kind of a magnificent failure when it wasn't good. It's kind of like the Eyes Wide Shut of TV or something. But what did you think?
Well, now with these varied revivals of dead TV shows that we've seen, pop up over the last few years. It didn't take me too long to get into this episode where I realized that, when it comes to stuff like Arrested Development or like X-Files, where like it really wasn't that good, but those of us that really like those things just kind of found a way to look the other way and just justify and kind of make up for some of their crap. I got an impression really quick into this, just like, oh, I'm not going to have to do that this time. This is actually going to be good, and I don't have to freaking, compromise myself just because I like this thing so much. So that's basically how it ended up shaking out for me. I was very impressed. I got back into it rather quickly, and I did a rewatch like a month or two ago, and I read the Mark Frost book that just covers like some stuff. I'm not going to get into that, but so I was kind of like in the zone for it. But yeah, I was not disappointed at all. I was confused as fuck, but I guess I'm supposed to be because it's Twin Peaks.
Exactly. I would say that I categorize as being pleasantly surprised, and as far as impressed, I'll tell you right now, I was way more impressed with the first 2 hours of this than the first 2 hours of the Return of the X-Files. That's for damn sure. Arrested Development is one of those eternal debate things because, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I do agree with you up to a certain point. I'm also the guy who recorded a bizarre YouTube song, you know, defending Arrested Development, which, you know what, lyric-wise, it's pretty awesome. But anyway.
Your song was significantly better than Season 4, in my humble opinion. And if you make a song for Season 5, I'll listen to it, but I'm not going to watch it.
I think there was some stuff to be found up in Season 4, but I get you. I'll take Season 4 of Arrested Development over Season... What was the really bad one of Community? That you don't watch, so you don't even know what I'm talking about.
I think that's Season 4, too, yeah. I think.
Which is funny, because I've had a conversation. I think I might have even written a blog about it or one of these stupid Facebook notes, how Season 4 is often one of the best seasons for a lot of TV shows. I think we've even had this conversation.
Yeah, I think, well, you and me definitely talked about this in the podcast.
Right, it was on a podcast. Yeah, Dexter, Seinfeld, The Wire, so many. I think we were talking. Maybe The Shield might be. I think might be season four. Might be the one. There's a bunch of others.
Star Trek, right? I mean, some of them.
But of course, it always has to be. But then maybe it doesn't work as well for 21st century comedies. I don't know. Anyway, back to Twin Peaks. Why are we talking about comedies? What's wrong? What's wrong with me? Unlike you, I was not able to do any recent rewatch. I mean, the most I did was I did skim. The season 2 finale, and then that might have been a mistake because I tried to watch it after not having slept for almost 2 days in a row, and I then tried to watch a little bit of Twin Peaks as well, and then I realized I can't. My brain is not able to absorb anything at this point. This is a show. This is a show I need to be well rested for if I'm going to watch it.
I can just imagine trying to deal with Black Lodge shit when you've been awake that long, and just what kind of condition your mind must have been in. Oh my god,
her screaming in my ears. I was like, oh god, that's going to be in my nightmares now, the Cheryl Lee scream. So this revival, this return, whatever we want, whatever they call it, I mean, obviously, I think you've got the biggest storyline, cliffhanger, story thread from 25, or actually 26, technically, years ago, was Cooper being trapped in the Black Lodge and the doppelganger being, you know, set free, whatever. I was always a little confused, which is par for the course for Twin Peaks. So it's the one show I don't mind being confused by. I was like, oh, I'll just go with it. Because more so than any other show, you don't know half the time if something is being done for a very specific plotting reason that's going to play a part somewhere, or they're just being cute and quirky and weirdly esoteric for no reason whatsoever. They do. That's a David Lynch thing for sure, and never more so than I think on Twin Peaks, quite frankly. Now, the Cooper doppelganger, or we can just call him Evil Cooper, I guess. Was he originally supposed to be like Bob's proxy, or, you know, under his control at some point? Is that what we're supposed to think when he first is released into the world? Was that the idea?
Yeah, I got the impression that kind of like, you know, Bob kind of like became the doppelganger, like, you know, using like whatever, you know, ability that he had, like he was able to like kind of like, you know, become like transformed in that body and then like, you know, then leave as him.
I think I initially thought that, Because there is that moment back in the finale when Agent Cooper smashes his head in the mirror, and when he looks in the mirror, we see Bob. So that makes
Right.
so that and that's what I thought. But then in this episode, I guess in the second hour, yeah, the second hour they do more stuff in the lodge in the second hour than they do in the first hour, if I recall. But I could be wrong. Doesn't matter. At one point, because basically whenever Cooper's in the lodge, it's people just telling him stuff, you know? And I thought at one point someone says that they need to bring the doppelganger back to see, bring him back to Bob. They make it like he has to come back to see Bob or to be with Bob there. I mean, again, they get really weird with their dialogue, so maybe I shouldn't really be interpreting it on the surface. But do you remember what I'm talking about? Do you
Yeah,
know?
I kind of got the impression that like they were kind of saying like the doppelganger had to come back, and like they, you know, and like they also said that like Bob had to come back, so it was kind of like one and the same.
Okay, all right. Then I will go along with that. I wasn't sure if he was Bob or was his own thing and was now, after 20 something years, is trying to assert himself, which is why he talked this mention of him being pulled back to the Black Lodge, but he's not going to go. But so let me ask you something. If I'm going to have to cough again, damn it. If he's Bob, if Bob is in this Cooper doppelganger body, does that also mean that he can also inhabit other bodies as well? Because that's the way I was interpreting the events in South Dakota, that Bob had done that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if yeah, I mean I really can't, you know, can't say at this point, 'cause I'm assuming that there's more than like, you know, more there's more like, you know, that kind of spirit than just Bob and Mike. So maybe like there's a, you know, like the South Dakota stuff is like, you know, there's a different, you know, different lodge there with different spirits doing something, and just there's, you know, some kind of they'll end up some kind of parallel there, whether it's like, you know, two bad ones or one good one, you know, one bad one. 'Cause, you know, on the original show, you know, for a while it was like, you know, Bob and then Mike, the one-armed man, seen in this episode, because of course, you know, the actor is still alive, which helps. The
Right.
you know, for a while they were both like, you know, bastards like Bob, and then Mike, you know, got over it and cut his arm off, and that was that. So that I could definitely see them maybe doing something where the in South Dakota there could be, you know, two bad ones, which, you know, could be interesting.
But they have Evil Cooper show up there, and he actually, because he shows up
Right.
there and kills the adulterous wife of the adulterous high school principal. It's just the way. See, what I was thinking was that, you look at what happened to Laura Palmer. It was an idyllic town that was a little weird, whatever. But, the high school cheerleader type girl, whatever the fuck she was, whatever. And the good father, whatever. But then he's inhabited by Bob and kills her, and it's like the whole sacrifice to the Black Lodge, and now she's trapped in there, and even now Leland Palmer's in there apparently, whatever. And I thought, well, maybe it's things like this, crimes like this, or sacrifices like this take place elsewhere as well. It's not just
Right.
that one. And when you hear the description of what happens in South Dakota, where Matthew Hilliard doesn't seem to remember what he did, his character, I guess, is Bill Hastings. Is that his character's name?
Yeah.
But he has that. He talks about there being like a dream, which makes you think, oh, okay. He probably did do all these things because his fingerprints were all over the apartment, whatever. But he was probably inhabited by some sort of like a Bob, and
Yeah, he definitely, you know, seemed to be having like the same kind of experiences that Leland was having originally.
right. Oh, and that's an actor who I've been seeing a lot over the last few years, and he, I mean, forgetting the fact that I always thought of him as being, oh, he's the guy from the Scream movies, and he was like Shaggy in one of the Scooby-Doo movies or something. But he's actually shown up and done a lot of good work in several TV shows over the last few years. Everything from The Bridge and a show that's just on the tip of my tongue, and I'm forgetting when the last year that he was really good on. And he always plays like an asshole reporter for some reason. I don't know why. But I thought he was really good in the scenes he had in this episode as well.
Oh yeah, they had him do a lot of stuff, and he definitely pulled off that, like, you know, confusion and terror, like really, really nicely. So Nice, nice. Good job.
And I think that's always very difficult to pull off, like really significant acting performances on a show like this, because everything always feels like it's more than just a little bit off. And it's really hard to critique acting on Twin Peaks, I find, because so much of it is done deliberately a certain way. Like when I went back and watched that finale, and I was struck by how many scenes felt like they were like, you know, just like really over the top daytime soap opera style. You know, like that whole scene with the doctor getting angry with Benjamin Horne. By the way, I thought they killed him in the finale. It looked like he bashed his head in with the big thing, but he looks fine. Yeah. So.
Yeah. What? Yeah. For a lot of the stuff for that, I mean, season two of Twin Peaks, the first half's pretty good. There's a fair amount of not goodness in the in the middle, and then it ends kind of strongish. And then with the finale, I mean, a lot of that stuff is just, I mean, they figured they were to get canceled, and they just decided to do like a bunch of just insane cliffhangers, trying to like, you know, force the network to pick them up, which obviously didn't work. But that's why, like, you know, there's just like so many like disjointed scenes that are kind of like that, where just, you know, everything escalates like instantly, and it just kind of feels schlocky. Because like the episode, like the couple episodes leading up to that are a lot less like, you know, they're planting the seeds for some of that stuff, but you know, it's just not quite as over the top.
Yeah, my recollection is it's similar. I mean, the first season of Twin Peaks is fantastic, and the first. I'd probably say a little less than half of the second season.
Yeah.
I mean, the shorthand is once they finish up the Laura Palmer mystery, the show kind of drops off.
It's more of a gradual decline, and you know, some stuff works, some stuff doesn't.
It starts to embrace a lot of weird soapy elements that seem to kind of, they were always there to a certain extent. But they lose their kind of quirky oddness that they had in the earlier part, and now they just become. Because I remember like those stuff like Audrey and that pilot, and I was like, going, what?
Billy's fucking Zane.
Move this along. Anyway, shouldn't be talking about the show from 2016. Back to this one. It's interesting because we got this 2-hour premiere. And we knew that we were going to get a lot of Kyle MacLachlan in it. I don't think we knew we were going to get more evil, like something out of a pulp novel bad guy, Kyle MacLachlan. But I really enjoyed it. It was really bizarre, but it's Twin Peaks, so it's kind of what you expect it to be, I guess.
Right.
They even gave him a decent wig. And we're so used to, I'm so used to seeing bad wigs on shows that we watch, everything from Arrow Now or Lost several years ago. I was like, that's not bad. I actually believe it's sort of plausible that it could be his hair. And we know it's not because we see him with his regular hair when he's in the lodge.
No, the wig was so good where, like, I thought, like, I wonder if they, like, you know, if he grew his hair out, they shot the scenes with, like, Doppelganger Cooper first, and then they get his hair cut. Because, I mean, it was a nice-looking wig.
Yeah, and you know, since they started shooting this so long ago, that's not impossible, quite frankly.
No, with Lynch directing every single episode, because, like, you know, somehow he found the energy and time to do all that. But with him doing that, I mean, it definitely, you know, the assistant directors would have their hands full trying to, like, you know, figure it out and get it all that stuff together. But it, you know, theoretically would be possible. Depends on how long they keep. You know, this version of Cooper around, you know, out in the world, that is.
Well, I feel like one of the plot lines is definitely going to be the tussle between him being in the real world and Cooper being in the Black Lodge. And obviously, I think we don't want to see Agent Cooper in the Black Lodge for the next several episodes, because at a certain point, for me, the novelty factor of the Black Lodge will start to dissipate. You know what I mean? Because it's like, okay, how many times can we have, you know, different characters sitting there doing the backwards forward speak, and now they got the evolution of the arm, which that felt like really old school David Lynch to me. That seemed like something that's like Eraserhead.
Right.
Lynch is like,
oh yeah, I just watched Eraserhead, and that totally was you know, that kind of thing there. And you know, but it works. I mean, like the thing, like the difference between David Lynch and like whatever happened after he left the season, you know, left the show during season two. I mean, you know, stopped making the show. He still showed up, you know, playing his character a few times. But like the difference between David Lynch and like, you know, those other guys. I mean, when they would do something that was quirky and weird and, you know, kind of out there, it just, I don't know, it just kind of felt, I don't know, just cheesy and not whatever. But when David Lynch does something, it's more like, you know, it's more abstract, and it's just kind of like, it's harder to like, you know, it doesn't really feel like it's done for like a deliberately like, you know, obtuse and weird reason sometimes. Like sometimes it actually seems like, you know, I don't understand what's going on there, but like what I'm seeing, like, you know, it makes sense to somebody on some level, and you know that's the difference here. So,
no, I could see that. Yeah, I mean, well, with Lynch, even though his output in the 21st century has been not much and spotty. I mean, I don't know. Has anyone actually seen Inland Empire? Maybe you have. I don't know. But
not yet.
Yeah, I haven't heard great things. Let's just leave it at that. But you know what? The thing with him is it's always going to be interesting. You know, like even going into this show, like I said, it's even if it ends up being, even if it sucks, but there's going to be something just fascinating to watch regardless. You know, and I'm happy that so far at least it didn't suck. But I also, you know, what I liked also about it, and now this will probably give us the way to get into the other parts about the show, was on one hand, it felt like a continuation of what we'd seen. But on the other hand, they went and did a whole lot of new things. Like, they never really, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if they ever left the city limits of Twin Peaks in the original two seasons. I don't recall it. Not to this extent.
I mean, they went up to the woods and they crossed the border up to, like, you know, One Eye Jack's. But other than that, I was shocked when I saw New York City. I mean, just completely shocked. I'm like, what the fuck is going on
that,
here?
Yeah, that to me was one of the first shocking things in the episode. It probably took me a little bit longer to get into it than you did. I mean, I was smiling initially at the very beginning, just seeing Agent Cooper in black and white with the character that Carol Struck in place. Oh, by the way, speaking about confusion. Okay. Let's go going. I'm gonna, once again, bouncing back to the original finale from season two, 26 years ago. There's a moment in the Black Lodge when you got the Michael J. Anderson character there, the little guy in the red suit, and you got Carol Struck in here, who's about 18 times taller than he is. And we've seen them at different times with Cooper over the last, you know, since like the beginning of season two on, whatever. At least that's when Carol Struckin first showed up, if I recall. But he actually says, and I thought that's where I have telling us, he goes, you know, one and the same. And I thought that was telling us, like, although these two are here at the same time, they're actually the same person, the same, because they've kind of served the same purpose on the show. Here's my confusion. But if you go and you watch the credits, or you look them up on IMDb or wherever, like, Michael J. Anderson is always referred to as the man from another place. But Carol Struckin's character, it's always seven question marks. Like, that was almost going to be the intro to this podcast instead of, I went with Cherry Pie and Coffee, but I was actually going to say the seven question marks, but I realized no one's going to know what the hell I'm talking about. But I was like, wait a minute, I thought you established in the finale that they're one and the same. So wouldn't he just be other man from another place or a tall man from another place? But whatever. I'm getting caught up on something stupid, I know. So, New York, which also was the location of the point in the show where suddenly I perked up and went, whoa, okay, now you got me. So you've got this kid's been hired, or it's almost like a school experiment, whatever, how can you go, whatever, where he's got to sit there and watch this glass box, which has got all these cameras on, all this equipment nearby. It looks like he keeps downloading, you know, whatever amount of time, you know, has been filmed on chips, and he's filing them away for them, whatever. Now, I'm guessing, especially with what we see in the second half, for someone determined, he refers to it as some, you know, billionaire, whoever like that might be. Someone somehow is determined that this location is somehow like a portal to the Black Lodge. Is that what I should think it is, or an exit point or something? Why else would it be that specific spot and the way that it's situated with that little circular thing and whatever? I mean, how someone figured that out? It takes me back to like Lost, trying to figure out how they figured out where the hatches were or something like that.
Yeah. I think like if somebody knows that, it kind of ties into like the stuff that Major Briggs was doing, like the Project Blue Book type stuff, that kind of thing. I get the impression like from the book that I read that it's kind of like has to do with that.
Right. And of course, since that's a lot of details from other things like earlier in the second season, I have no memory of it, unfortunately. They do make a reference to him in the episode though, don't they? I think they make. Am I wrong about that? I think I heard the major get name dropped.
When Doppelganger Cooper is like using some piece of equipment to like talk to David Bowie's character from the movie, like maybe talking to his character from the movie, and like he mentions that.
Right. Dan, are you still there, or did your audio go out on me?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm still here. I thought you muted and were coughing or something.
No. I thought you muted.
No.
But I was like okay with the first half hour, 20-odd minutes, a half hour, and then the first like whoa moment happens, where something appears in that glass box, and it was just such a, how do I put this? There was something just so beautifully nightmarish about it, that really struck me. It was almost like, you know, almost like a charcoal sketch come to life or something.
Yeah, it was like a stop motion charcoal sketch. It was really, really creepy.
And then when it actually,
oof.
And it's interesting because it's one of those, the way it's shot and the deliberate kind of the way they overlay the two shots on one another. So it's almost deliberately done not to look realistic, which almost makes it more weird. Which kind of reminds me of the way Hitchcock would talk about doing things, where people would say, "Oh, but that shot in Vertigo clearly doesn't look." It's like, no, it's the beauty of the artifice, and that's what makes it more striking, and that's why Hitchcock would like to do that. And I think that's what David Lynch is doing here, where yes, it doesn't look as, you know, oh, it's like it's really there, like a really great CGI or whatever the heck kind of what people would normally do. He does something a little bit different. But you can see it's like that you're realizing, I don't know if it's spraying blood on him or it's actually just literally just massacring. I think it's massacring them is what it's doing, actually.
Yeah.
It's a horrific image, though you really can't see any of what's going on, you know, but you feel like you did, which is, that's the genius of it. That's the, to use Hitchcock one more time, that's like the psycho element of it. I mean, if you go back, I think if you go back and look at it, you see a lot. You see them screaming, and you see like blood being streaked all on them. But I don't think you see one wound on them, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure you don't.
No. Yeah, I don't think you see any.
But that I mean, despite how tired I had been, that really woke me up.
Yeah. Do you have any theories as to what exactly that was that came through the thing? 'Cause I have one.
Well, pretty sure it ain't Bob. So,
yeah.
I think there's more than just Bob, quite frankly, out there, obviously. So what do you think it is?
I think it's the doppelganger of, like, Mike's arm, like the tree, if that makes any sense. Because, like, right when Cooper kind of, like, you know, goes to escape from there, like, that thing, it's like there's, like, the doppelganger, like, tree thing, like, blocking him. And like the way like this thing kind of attacks him kind of seems, you know, kind of felt to me like, you know, branches like whipping them in the face, that kind of thing. So it's really strange, but I mean, it, you know, based on the information we have, and you know, it works as good as anything, I guess.
It's, you know what, I think this is one of those shows more so than any other, including, you know, shows like Lost, whatever, where people love doing their theories, where I think there's so many billions of ways one can go with this show because it's especially when David Lynch is behind it, because Lynch is an artist in his own right, not just, with film. I think he actually is an artist. Isn't he a painter, a sculptor, and stuff like that? I'm pretty sure he is.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he does now, yeah.
Right. So it, although one can say any TV show technically is supposed to be a work of art, with Lynch, I think it pushes it just a little bit further, which means it's also always open to any, you can interpret it any which way you want. So one can go to town with this stuff.
Yeah,
I like that
it's a
theory.
lot.
I think
Yeah, it
my only problem is like the form that we see seems to have some sort of a humanoid form before it's released out. So, but that doesn't really mean anything because who the heck knows? I'm wondering what happened to the security guard. Where's the security guard? Just stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm guessing that the guard left on purpose, because maybe a hookup with what it took to like open a hole or whatever. I don't know. It depends on who's bankrolling the project, what their intentions are.
Right. I do want to point out, because just because we mentioned how long ago they might have started doing some of the filming on this, that it was both nice and sad to see the log lady,
Olsen, yeah.
Clark, Catherine Coulson, right? Because apparently she was very ill when she filmed those scenes. I think she died shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
So that was, and I did know that. So that was that when I saw her on screen, I even saw her with like the little oxygen tubes. I realized that's probably hers. That's probably what she actually needed. That wasn't, I don't think that was for the
Yeah.
show.
Yeah, that was a really sad thing.
But I love that she was able to be on it. Now, I was wondering if is the tree there to replace Michael, the little man? Because I kind of I'm wondering if he's going to show up or not. Because I don't think
Yeah,
he's
I
listed.
kind of think he's like it seems like he's kind of like Lara Flynn Boyle, where like just like such a complete asshole, they don't want anything to do with him, so they just aren't going to bring him back.
Oh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah,
I thought maybe.
he it's, I don't know, he like he said like he really badmouthed David Lynch at like some point after the fact. I don't remember what it was, like he abused him or fucking something. I don't know what it was. I don't know why I'm laughing, but I don't think they're gonna bring him back just because, just
That's a
not.
shame. He was really good on Carnival, and I actually did a little bit
Yeah.
of. I was reading his bio, like on IMDb, and realized, holy crap, he used to work for NASA. That's amazing. A
Yeah.
guy used to work for NASA, like a computer, a computer geek at NASA, was the little man on Twin Peaks. That's amazing. Anyway, yeah, I mean, there's a lot I really enjoyed about this. That said, there are things that remind me that, especially because it's David Lynch doing it. David Lynch, much like a lot of other directors, can be a little bit on the self-indulgent side. And I both liked and disliked the idea that he feels the need to test our patience. And boy, he tests our patience a couple times in these 2 hours. I mean, good Lord, the entire. Go back in time, how long it takes for them to get into Ruth Davenport's room. I mean, okay, I remember way back when, and they played with it a little bit in this episode, you'd have the things that take too long because of Lucy, describing what, which phone to pick up or the button or whatever, and stuff like that. Or the old guy walking across the room, which could drive me a little crazy as well, I will admit. But I was like, oh, are you kidding me? And then for me, the why it bothered me more there, it's not that there weren't some funny things in it. I'll admit there's some funny stuff in there. But it felt like it was done more for effect than anything else. And it wasn't going to add anything because none of these characters were going to play a part in this beyond this. So that it kind of, it did bug me a little bit. I didn't hate it, but it was like,
Yeah.
this is annoying me a little bit,
Yeah, I didn't mind it, but it definitely kind of felt like some of those moments in like Fire Walk With Me where like there was just like, weird stuff happening for a while that never really kind of went anywhere.
Yeah, see, I haven't seen it since I saw it the one time, and I just remember I didn't like it very much. I just remember getting really
Yeah.
pissed off about it. I mean, I know David Bowie's in it, that was pretty cool, but I just remember being really pissed off about it.
Yeah, I didn't like it the first time, and then each time I've watched it since then, I like it more, and like I actually really like it now.
maybe I will revisit it one of these days. But I think also at the time I was all jacked up to go see it because of Twin Peaks, and then I was like, wait a minute, I read The Diary of Laura Palmer. I don't. You're just giving me stuff, half the stuff I know already, and half the stuff I don't care. I want to know what happened to Cooper in the Lodge, you bastards. But whatever. And also, up until the crazy stuff happens in New York, that was starting to get on me, my nerves a little bit. The kid just sitting there staring at the box. I was like, that went on just a touch longer than it needed to. But I feel Lynch is going to do that. He's going to push it, and sometimes I think he can get away with it. And we come away with it like, wow, that was really something. And sometimes, maybe not so much at times. And I think, I mean, that's a tradition of certain directors who have done that. Kubrick was also the kind of guy who was kind of guilty of that at times. Mm. But again, that was the kind of stuff that I didn't get angry, but it was stuff that kind of was testing my patience. But I stuck with it because, like, okay, I know it's early. It's only 20 minutes into the episode. I know there's going to be good stuff. I just get through this. Just get through this.
Right. Yeah, I definitely get the impression that there'll probably, you know, less of that drawn-out stuff as the story moves forward, too. You know, just that kind of there for, like, you know, to establish the tone and to, you know, help make some of the, you know, creepy stuff maybe a little bit a hair more unsettling. But I think now, you know, as they continue to, like, you know, make more use of some of the other characters that, you know, we just saw a little bit of, like, you know, Bobby and James and, you know, Shelley and whoever. I'm guessing that, you know, they're going to want to have, you know, actually see them do stuff instead of, you know, long, drawn-out, loving camera shots of, you know.
Did we see Bobby? We didn't see Bobby, did we?
I know
we
saw. Bobby's in the bar at the end, too.
He's in the misplaced scene the episode.
Mm. Yeah. He kind of gives, like, Shelley, you know, points at, like, you know, gun points at her with his finger gun, or like.
Oh, that was Bobby. It didn't look like him to me. I kept thinking that guy. Yeah. He looks almost like Charlie Sheen there. I didn't realize that was Bobby. Really? Okay. I mean, I recognized James. That was definite. He was easy to not recognize.
Yeah.
I will say that, and one of the reasons I've always, you know, dug Twin Peaks is that, you know, yeah, I was talking, I mentioned the self-indulgent stuff, and sometimes it can be too quirky for its own good, but especially in these two episodes, I mean, especially the second hour for me, I thought a lot of the quirkiness was so creepy, it worked well. Like, that weird moment of Laura Palmer's mom watching really horribly graphic nature footage of, like, lions slaughtering a buffalo or something. The way it's, like, I guess there are mirrors behind her, so it's reflected behind her. So it has a far more surreal quality to it. That was a moment that, on one hand, one could say, well, there's no reason for it to be there. It's like, who cares? It was just a really eerie, chilling thing that it made mean nothing. I don't care. It's also nice to see that character again because Grace Zabriskie, whatever.
Just to see their house too. I'm just like, oh, their house.
Oh, right. And what about that moment with Evil Cooper at the storage unit place? When he's got the guy's face,
I don't fucking know.
And he just keeps. And that's one of those. Wait, how long is this going to go on for? Because he keeps smushing the guy's cheeks over and over and over. And I believe later on, before he. Before he kills the Daria, is it Daria? Daria in the motel room. I think he makes a reference to he killed that guy. I think that's
right. It. Yeah.
So it sounds like he's just killing all of them, quite frankly. And then was that Jennifer Jason Leigh who was next door? I was like, oh, I didn't know Jennifer Jason Leigh was going to be in this. I guess I should have, because isn't, like, everyone going to be in this at some point?
Pretty much.
I mean, I was like. Ashley Judd's trying to keep a straight face in her moment on screen, whatever. You know, it's been a long time since I watched Twin Peaks when I actually forgot that the Horn brothers were named Ben and Jerry. And I went, oh, I forgot the silliness of naming them Ben and Jerry. But overall, I really liked it. I wish I was as absorbed in the first two episodes of Fargo this season the way I was the first two episodes of Twin Peaks this season. Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching parts 3 and 4, and seeing where this goes.
I waited to watch the next two. I like to delay my gratification whenever possible.
It's your TV tantric ways.
I suppose, you know, waiting a zillion years. I didn't watch the show until, I don't know, 2010 or something, maybe a year or two before that. But so it hasn't been that crazy of a wait for me. Yeah. But, you know, it was nice. But I can wait another week.
Yeah. You're talking to someone that up until a couple of years ago, up in my closet, I still had all the episodes on VHS that I had taped with my, you know, with the scroll. And probably, I think, and if I recall, the first tape, I had most or all of, it was an 8-hour tape, that's right. I had the whole first season, and if one were to put that on, you'd see, oh, someone's watched this a million times over. And then you put in three tapes that were season two, and you'll notice, oh, some of these seem like they've been hardly watched at all. Yeah, there's a reason for that. just to clarify something I said, I thought that, I mean, I remember that the old show used to occasionally would end with like the band performing at the bar and whatever, and you know, it was kind of cool. But I thought, power of the episode wise, I would have reversed the Cooper Lodge stuff with that if possible, you know, just because I think it would have ended on a stronger note. It kind of like ended a little bit more limply, and then you could have come back just with her singing over the final credits. But I mean, it doesn't really matter that much, of course. But I'm watching it, especially because my friends had DVR'd it, so it looked like there's all this time left. I was like, oh, there's like another 9 minutes. Then you realize, no, there's only like a minute, and then some credits, and then it's like 8 minutes of Showtime's bullshit, whatever. But
I kind of like how they ended in like a little bit more of a positive note, because I mean there is just so much creepy and disturbing and unsettling stuff over the first most of the first two episodes. So I kind of liked how at the end, I mean, they just kind of, you know, you see some old characters, and you know, just, you know, have to, you know, certain, I have no idea what the heck's going on there. Like, for example, like, you know, Jacques Renault's like in the background there, and like, you know, Leland killed him in way back in season two, I suppose, or maybe season one. But, you know, so, you know, he's dead, and, you know, it's the same actor playing. I don't know. I think it's the same. Maybe it's just a different character or whatever. But, you know, like, that character is supposed to be dead. And, you know, there's a variety of other characters that are kind of like, you know, hanging around there. And I probably have to rewatch it again, because like, I didn't even like notice that like Ronette Pulaski was like hanging out at the same table as Shelley. So I want to know like who else is sitting there. But, you know, I kind of enjoyed that, you know, the way they ended it, and just kind of like had like, you know, music, you know, that kind of Twin Peaks-esque music playing.
True.
You know.
No, I get that. Definitely. I understand that, and I did like seeing the people, even though I was like, oh yeah, all the people in the storylines that I remember not caring about as the show went on. But, you know, I was like, oh, James, are you going to sing? But here's a quick question. So Audrey is going to be alive, because how the hell did she survive being blown up in the bank vault anyway? Or maybe because there's no way she should have survived. But I guess maybe they'll come up with something. I'm sure.
Yeah, that I read about that, and that's actually in the book that I read too.
Oh boy, I can hardly wait.
Yeah,
I used to have such a thing for Show and Finn way back when.
Yeah, it's not that bad.
Okay, I mean, hey, you know what? As far as I'm concerned, they can retcon half of that shit as far as I care. So, and I know that, I know they won't, but I feel they're gonna. I you know what? They're allowed. As far as I'm concerned, they're allowed to do whatever the hell they want. They can screw around stuff as much as they want. I'm not going to be one of the people crying about it. I'm like, no, that doesn't make sense. Because again, I don't. I thought you killed Benjamin Horn when his head hit the edge of the fireplace, whatever.
Yeah.
And apparently, he just got knocked out. You know, I was like, oh, is that on? He doesn't even have a scar. Maybe he did. Didn't even notice it.
I love how he still has like the, you know, his name like woodcut like thing on his desk.
Yes.
It's, you know, they had a lot of like, you know, fun stuff like that, but just, you know, fun callbacks. So just,
what,
you know,
what,
the people that were,
what was the point of like the, what's his name, the I guess it was the, was it the psych, the guy used to be the psychiatrist, getting like those shovels delivered?
Yeah, Dr. Jacoby. I'm not sure
what was that about? It just went on forever, and it's just like, wait, he just had some shovels delivered. What? That was another one of those patience testers, I thought. He was like, okay, thank you. But then they would do cool stuff like, oh, like, you know, like something on a Lost Highway with the car and the music. And it's like that satanic, you know, song that was playing
yeah.
when Cooper, Evil Cooper was driving. And I was like, oh, dude, why am I watching this at 2 in the morning? I need to not watch this now. Wait, I wasn't watching it 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
I was watching it.
And like, and the stuff with like Hawk, like hanging around outside the sycamore trees, you know, and like the curtains are starting to show up, you know, just like, they haven't dug in really deeply to a lot of the stuff that's going on with like some of that stuff, but like, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do.
Yeah. I'm also curious because we had that moment where the guy's looking for Sheriff Truman and she asked which one.
Yeah.
And correct me if I'm wrong, that actor's not supposed to be coming back though. He's like one of the people,
yeah.
Michael Ankin, is that how he pronounces his name?
Yeah, he just doesn't want to act anymore. He's retired, so he ain't doing it.
Which is fine, but I'm just wondering, is that their way of avoiding it? And then maybe he'll have like
yeah.
a son who's there now instead or something? Or he'd be really
yeah.
young though, but anyway. I haven't really looked at who else is supposed to not show up, because I know some people want to, like Joan Chen's not going to show up again from what I hear.
She's still stuck in the fucking doorknob. Oh no!
Stupidest thing of all time. but is Peggy Lipton going to show up? Because she's still around, you know. I'd like to see Peggy Lipton again.
Yeah, her is, and you know, Big Ed, like a lot of those other, you know, like there's lots of people that are still most of them are coming back, which is pretty amazing.
Hey, I've already seen a still of David Duchovny in drag again, and I'm like, okay, I can hardly wait for that. I can hardly wait. That's so cool. Pre-Mulder. You know, David Duchovny and Dragon.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Okay. Wow. Hey, I think we nicely. Ooh, all three great shows, multiple hours of TV, and we were able to do it all in an hour and a half. Check it out. We're
yeah,
awesome.
I know. It's been exciting times for, you know, and like for me, it's a good week because I got to talk about Leftovers with our friends, Kelly and Susan, on their podcast earlier this week, and then, you know, get to talk about Saul, Twin Peaks, and like Fargo, like actually being good.
Yeah.
Like good. So it's a fun week. Plus, you know, we ran out of time to talk about like the comic book shows, but the ones I watched of those did not suck either. So I'm in a pretty good mood with TV this week.
I agree. The Leftovers I thought was one of their strongest episodes of the season. All three things we talked about tonight, I was pretty high on. And to varying degrees, spoiler for our podcast, whatever the heck we're going to have time to record it, I did enjoy to some extent all three of the superhero finales that were on this week. Some more than others, but I'm not going to be bashing them as much as I would like to. So, yeah.
Good.
Good TV week, absolutely. All right. This is all considered part of the wrap-up, so I'm going to start wrapping things up now.
Okay.
So, if you enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you did, you'd probably enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. You can look that up, like the page, and join the conversation about shows such as Fargo, Twin Peaks, Better Call Saul, and so many others. You can find us on iTunes the very same way. You go to iTunes, you type in Serious TV Drama Podcast. You can subscribe to our feed as well as rate and review us there. And finally, you can also follow us on Twitter. I should really make better use of Twitter. We might actually get a few more listeners that way. But our handle there is at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama. We will be back with the rest of the STVD All-Star Squad at some point in the next few to several days to wrap up all those superhero finales that we just haven't had time to get to this week. And you and I will be probably getting together mid to late next week to talk about... At the very least, we're going to talk about Fargo and Better Call Saul. I got
There's
a sneaking
no Saul next week.
Oh, there isn't? Oh, Memorial Day. Okay,
yeah,
then we're doing Twin Peaks. Then we're definitely doing
yeah.
Twin Peaks. Okay, that's guaranteed then.
I got
a feeling if I can still, because I don't have showtime, but if I can continue to find a way to see the episode somehow, I'll continue to be able to talk about them on the podcast. That's going to be the
yeah.
trick, you know. It's like, oh,
yeah.
Scott, I hope you stay unemployed and you can keep sneaking into your friend's house or something.
And we can, yeah, we can just see how it goes with that, you know, how much we feel like doing after the other shows. And if we want to get together, you know, every few weeks or something and talk about Twin Peaks or whatever, and talk about news, just to keep the, you know, keep our skills, how inconsiderable they are, fresh.
Right. I mean, and yeah, and when we do the superhero one, I'm probably going to talk about some of my ideas of how we're I kind of want to change the way things are done next season, that just to lighten the burden, particularly on the two of us, because it's too much. But I think I found a happy medium that should be able to cover everything we want to cover without it being such a pressing amount of work to do on every week, as far as whether it be pre-production on my end or post-production on your end, you know?
Yeah, sweet.
Okay, so
Interesting.
hopefully that will go over well. And so thanks for getting together tonight to get this one done. I look forward to talking to you again. And thanks to everyone out there. Good night.
Good night.
I got idea, man. You take me for a walk under the sycamore tree. The dark trees that blow, baby, in the dark trees that blow, and I'll see you, and you'll see me, and I'll see I'll see you in the tree. I'll see you in the tree. The sycamore tree. Sycamore tree.